Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 587, titled Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This program is being recorded on February 25th of the year 2007. Let me, as always, encourage you in the strongest fashion to utilize the Spitfire website and the other linked websites, because those of you who only listen to the broadcast itself, either live on one of the radio stations that carries it, or on the internet, or podcast, or whatever, you're only getting a small portion at this point of the For the Record experience, because there are long article-length written descriptions of the broadcasts, books, websites with the entire For the Record series archived by sister station WFMU, a search function, and all kinds of supplemental information. I think at this point it could be said without qualification that the Spitfire website and its linked websites are the greatest individual resource for this type of information available. It is a cornucopia of anti-fascism and a vast and growing resource, and a big tip of the hat to those of you who are contributing and have contributed. Also a big tip of the hat to those of you who have taken the bit in your mouths and run with it, because there's a growing number of people who have begun to access the For the Record information or download the For the Record information into the blog sphere and elsewhere on the internet. So a hearty thank you from yours truly, and two thumbs up to those of you who are doing that. And indeed, I think increasingly using the internet material is going to become essential for really fully grasping this series. For example, last year I did a series during the Lebanon War called Middle East Matrix. And one of the things that is very, very difficult, perhaps impossible past a point, for human beings to overcome is the concept of the big lie. Hitler in Mein Kampf said, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end." When one sees a lie disseminated by the media, disseminated by a government, disseminated by an individual or an institution that is held in high esteem, it's extremely difficult, perhaps past a point impossible, for people to grasp that, in fact, it's a lie, just that it's a big lie, a great big huge lie, the complete reversal of facts. In the Lebanon War, for example, we were shown things that just quite simply did not happen, manufactured events. And yet, when these manufactured events are presented as news, as fait accompli, plural, there really is not a lot people can do. Fortunately, the internet, which is subject to plenty of disinformation itself, exists as something of a counterweight. But then again, the internet itself can be used to manufacture big lies, and we're going to be talking about some of that in connection with the 9/11 quote truth unquote movement a little later on. But please do use the websites, and increasingly, I think people who only listen are going to be handicapped in their understanding, because with regard, for example, to the non-massacre at Qana during the Lebanese War, or what was represented as an attack on an ambulance, quite simply, the facts as they could be discerned from examining the photographic evidence, the credible photographic evidence of the event, simply did not support what was advanced as truth. And fortunately, we do have the internet, and there I can present a visual component as well as an auditory component as well. By the way, do not ignore the For the Record blog sphere. The person who's been putting that together has also been putting together supplemental articles in an FTR supplemental section and generally doing a wonderful job. So please, please, please do use the websites. Now, updating September 11th and related matters. As the person who pointed this article out to me noted, is this simply a heads up or is this Coles to Newcastle? From the ABC blog, from ABC News, accused terrorist is big GOP donor. This is from February 19th of 2007. Justin Rood, RWOD, reporting. The National Republican Congressional Committee, or NRCC, won't say what it plans to do with thousands of dollars in campaign contributions it received from an accused terror financier. Abdul Tawala Ibn Ali Al-Ishtari gave $15,250 to the NRCC since 2002, according to FEC records published on the website OpenSecrets.org. On Friday, Al-Ishtari pled not guilty to funding terrorism and other crimes, including financial fraud. The NRCC is the main political group dedicated to helping the Republican Party win seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Reached Monday for comment, an NRCC spokeswoman declined to discuss the matter on the record. The indictment against Al-Ishtari, unsealed in Manhattan federal court Friday, charges him with providing material support to terrorists by transferring $152,000 between banks to allegedly be used to purchase night vision goggles and other equipment needed for a terrorist training camp. Al-Ishtari, a.k.a. Michael Mixon, M-I-X-O-N, was paid for his efforts to collect and transfer the funds, which included $25,000 sent from a bank in New York to a bank in Montreal, Canada, the indictment alleges. And still later, the list says he, that is to say Mr. Al-Ishtari, was made a life member of the NRCC's inner circle, unquote, and was named New York State Businessman of the Year by the group in 2003 and 2004. The NRCC Business Person of the Year fundraising campaign, which gave such, quote, awards, unquote, to at least 1,900 GOP donors, has been derided as a telemarketing scam by political watchdogs. The online list also claims Al-Ishtari was appointed to the president's, quote, U.S. NRCC White House Business Advisory Group, unquote. An archive website for one of Al-Ishtari's companies, globalprotector.net, claims it had demonstrated a, quote, web filter, unquote, technology for officials of the Department of Defense's Miami, Florida-based Southern Command, or Southcom, which coordinates U.S. military operations in Central and South America and the Caribbean, and oversees the controversial Guantanamo Bay detention facility. It's not at all clear just to what extent this demonstration took place. It may have simply been a sales presentation. And also, the fact that Al-Ishtari was a big GOP donor does not necessarily mean he was literally the business person of the year for the GOP. What is more than a little significant, however, is the fact that we have yet another prominent Republican Party donor who also now appears to be involved, or at least has been accused of being involved with terror financing. Whatever the eventual determination concerning Mr. Al-Ishtari's guilt or innocence, this certainly is the type of thing that we have seen plenty of in the past, and something that very disturbingly has not been taken into account by, well, not really a whole lot of people. One of the things that I've discussed at great length and in great detail over the years since September 11th concerns Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Institute. This is part of the GOP ethnic milieu, so to speak, a milieu which includes, which in the past has included the incorporation of entire SS intelligence units and other Central and Eastern European fascist organizations into the Republican Party per se. The Islamic Institute, for all practical purposes, represents a Muslim Brotherhood entity within the Republican Party. That institution, specifically designed to bring the growing Muslim population of the United States into the Republican camp, was founded by Grover Norquist and Karl Rove. Indeed, Grover Norquist, the most important right-wing lobbyist in Washington, one of the most important stars in the GOP right-wing cosmology, so to speak, or right-wing firmament, Grover Norquist himself has married a Palestinian Muslim woman. The Palestinian Muslims are among the more conservative Muslim cultures, and that's being charitable. When asked point blank by a GOP colleague whether or not he had converted to Islam, Grover Norquist said that's too personal a question, unquote. I don't think that it's a great stretch to see that as a between the lines, yes. What is more than a little significant here is not just the fact that we have a profound element of intersection between the Islamo-Fascist Muslim Brotherhood and the Republican Party, but specifically a nice chunk of the most extreme and significant elements of the GOP leadership, Rove and Norquist, are basically pro-Islamist. The stance of the Bush administration vis-a-vis Middle Eastern countries and what has come to be known as the, quote, war on terror, unquote, notwithstanding. Indeed, in For the Record programs numbers 560 and 561, Economics 9/11, we took a look at the fact that very significant elements of the multinational corporatist community view the Muslim Brotherhood and its corporatist agenda with great favor. Indeed, the World Bank, headed up now by Citizen Wolfowitz, views Ibn Khaldun, the Muslim Brotherhood's economic mentor, a 14th century thinker, which is interesting in and of itself. Ibn Khaldun has been hailed by the World Bank as, quote, the first advocate of privatization, unquote. And just as the fascism of the World War II period was presented to the average American man and woman as an aberration, so too Islamism is presented as a weird cult manifestation. But the fact of the matter is that the transnational corporations and their advocates view the Muslim Brotherhood with great favor, and indeed, as I said, none other than the World Bank, headed up by Citizen Wolfowitz, views Ibn Khaldun as the pace setter for privatization. One of the things that has received no notice and no coverage substantively concerns this GOP / Muslim Brotherhood / terrorist link. The Muslim Brotherhood is an explicit fascist organization. It is a Muslim fascist organization that was allied with Nazi Germany and fascist Italy in World War II, and then jumped first to British intelligence, then to the Central Intelligence Agency during the Cold War, where, like other fascists, it was used as an anti-communist combatant force in various places, most recently in Afghanistan during the anti-Soviet war in the 1980s, and the evidence suggests very strongly that elements of Western intelligence, including American and British intelligence, supported Islamist / Muslim Brotherhood combatants during the Balkans War as well. I think there is considerable evidence that what we might call the Afghan paradigm was applied in the Balkans in the 1990s, and that, in fact, Muslim Brotherhood and Islamist elements were used to fight the Serbs and to help break up one of the last communist countries in Europe. I suspect that one of the reasons why the Muslim Brotherhood and why Al-Qaeda was as relatively late appearing on the radar screens of people who should otherwise have known is precisely because of the fact that at the same time as Al-Qaeda was manifesting its anti-American viewpoints and embodying those in acts, at the same time, in that same rough period, they were also functioning as anti-communist cadre in the Balkans, as they had in Afghanistan and as they had throughout the Cold War and even before the Cold War. One of the details that the fact that it has been ignored is just amazing. That concerns the fact that after the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids were conducted, and after the Safa Network and the overlapping Safa, to the SAR Network and the overlapping Safa Trust were busted on March 20th, 2002, 2 weeks later, on April 4th, 2002, Talat Otman interceded with then-Treasury Secretary O'Neill, who oversaw the Customs and Secret Service agents who helped to conduct those raids, and he, that is to say, Talat Otman, interceded with then-Treasury Secretary O'Neill on behalf of the individuals and the institutions that were targeted by those raids. Now, Talat Otman is not just any old person. Talat Otman was a director of Harkin Energy, one of George W. Bush's energy companies. He gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2002. He also was a close personal friend and political advisor of both George's Bush, and he interceded on April 4th, 2002, with then-Treasury Secretary O'Neill on behalf of the individuals and entities who had been busted for funding Al-Qaeda and Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Parenthetically, Operation Green Quest agents charged that the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI were actively blocking their efforts at investigating those targets. Treasury Secretary O'Neill was fired later that year. He, quote, resigned, unquote. He was forced out later in 2002, and that investigation has languished. It is really quite something. Talat Otman, by the way, was also an operating director of the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove, literally the GOP Muslim Brotherhood terrorist lobby, and something that has been completely ignored. Far from being ignored, elements associated with that have been hailed by the most misguided, quote, progressive, unquote, sector as heroes. The Operation Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002 stemmed from an investigation into Professor Sami Al-Aryan, a guy I call Sammy the Aryan. He is a computer scientist and a professor at South Florida University, and there is also the strongest evidence that he is very closely associated with Palestinian Islamic Jihad, not only a terrorist group, but an offshoot of the aforementioned Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood. It was the investigation into Sami Al-Aryan that led to the Operation Green Quest raids. However, once those raids unfolded, as we've seen in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record 569, the elements in the FBI and CIA began investigating the Operation Green Quest investigators and not the targets of that investigation. The fact that powerful Saudi elements and GOP elements linked with the Saudi/Muslim Brotherhood milieu were implicated in those raids may have a lot to do with why that took place. Note in this context that big Saudi capital wields a profound role in the American political/economic landscape. Not only, of course, do the Saudis provide a lot of our oil, a lot of the world's oil, they also own a lot of America's T-bills. They are also heavily invested in corporate America. The largest media corporation in the world, AOL Time Warner, is controlled by a minority consortium of Saudi princes, including Prince Al-Waleed, the largest stockholder in the largest media corporation of the world, and also the largest contributor, according to many sources, to Hamas. Prince Al-Waleed is also the largest stockholder in the largest commercial bank in the world, namely Citibank. And he's also the second largest stockholder in the second largest media corporation of the world, News Corp, of Rupert Murdoch. He's also the second largest investor in Berlusconi's media empire in Italy. Prince Al-Waleed is also heavily invested with Disney. Specifically, he helped to bail out Euro Disney and is heavily invested in the Disney resorts. There is another alleged Al-Qaeda financier who I cannot discuss because this investigation is underway as we speak, but this guy also is heavily invested in Disney. So when we're talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, of which Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad are offshoots, we are talking about an institution, many of whose backers are at the very epicenter, or certainly major players, on the international political/economic scene. Just as was the case with the fascism of the World War II period, where some of the most prominent industrialists and financiers in the Western nations were involved with the funding of fascism, so too in the contemporary period many of the most important financial backers of the Muslim Brotherhood and its various terrorist offshoots are very, very important players on the transnational corporate landscape and in its related political environment. One of the things that is more than a little revealing concerns I call him Sammy the Aryan, that's Sammy Al-Aryan, the individual the investigation of whom led to the March 20th, 2002 raids. Sammy the Aryan is once again being hailed as a political martyr by the so-called progressive sector, and yet the latest focal point of his supposed martyrdom is more than a little revealing. Sammy Al-Aryan, or Sammy the Aryan, is turning into Sammy the Hungry Aryan. He's on a hunger strike and is being hailed as a martyr and a victim of political persecution by the Amen Chorus, specifically all people like the CAIR, which unfortunately has been allowed to represent Muslims in the United States and does not appear to me to be representative at all of Muslims either in the U.S. or elsewhere. It's a reactionary organization, one whose members have defended terrorists in the past and not at all representative of Muslims in the U.S. or elsewhere. But, as that old song says, nice work if you can get it, and they've got it, and they are the advocates of choice for the Muslim community, and they are hailing Sami the Aryan as something of a political martyr. We're going to note why Sami the Aryan is now being once again elevated to martyr status. It's because he refused to testify before a grand jury about the International Institute of Islamic Thought. Now, that is a Herndon-based think tank that was one of the institutions raided on the March 20th, 2000, and, or as part of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. The following is from the Washington Post of Tuesday, November 14th of 2006. This article was written by Jerry Maracon of the Washington Post. It's headlined, Witness is Silent in Terror Probe. Ex-professor says grand jury testimony would endanger him. A potentially key witness has refused to testify in the long-running investigation into whether Islamic charities in Northern Virginia were financing terrorist organizations, according to recently unsealed court documents. Former Florida professor Sami El-Aryan declined to answer questions before a federal grand jury in Alexandria last month, according to documents unsealed in federal court in Tampa. Aryan, who was acquitted in one of the nation's highest-profile terrorism cases but then pleaded guilty to a single charge, believes his life would be in danger if he testified, his attorneys told a judge. This sentence one more time. Aryan, who was acquitted in one of the nation's highest-profile terrorism cases but then pleaded guilty to a single charge, believes his life would be in danger if he testified, his attorneys told a judge. Well, if the IIIT is such a benign institution, why would his life be in danger if he testified about this innocent, benign institute? It's a very revealing statement by this man's attorneys. As revealing, really, as Grover Norquist, when asked if he'd converted to Islam, said, too personal a question, unquote. It's a very revealing statement indeed. Continuing, prosecutors want Aryan to reveal what they believe are his ties to the International Institute of Islamic Thought, or IIIT, a Herndon think tank that is one of the key organizations under investigation. The probe, which federal officials have called the nation's largest terrorism financing investigation, is focused on a Herndon-based network of Muslim charities, businesses, and think tanks. The Muslim charities deny any terrorist ties. Skipping down. No charges have been filed against the principals of the Herndon-based cluster of companies and charities that are at the center of the investigation, and their attorneys and some Muslims have labeled the raids a fishing expedition. Well, that's because some very, very powerful people in Washington, including people who are at the epicenter of the GOP power nexus, like Norquist and Rove and Talat Adnan, are implicated in associating with these same people. They're collaborating with these same people. That and the fact that the Saudis basically, to a large extent, economically control the United States is basically what is leading to the cover-up of this. And sadly, I don't think that there's much progress at all that's likely to be made on this front. Skipping down. The investigation has spanned nearly half a decade, according to court documents and law enforcement officials, because it involves a complex trail of international transactions between corporations and related charitable entities. The government believes Aryan could help untangle the money trail, court documents indicate. In an affidavit filed in support of the search warrants and unsealed in 2003, Homeland Security agent David Kane laid out alleged ties between Aryan and IIIT, writing that IIIT was once the largest contributor to what he called a Palestinian Islamic Jihad front group run by Aryan. In the written description to this program, I'm going to once again include a link to a photo that I have in, among other programs, For the Record 537, the descriptions for 537 and 538. It shows a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rally from April 15th of 2005, And that's the group with which Samuel Arion is affiliated. The judge's instructions basically led to his acquittal and not the evidence itself. Palestinian Islamic Jihad is not only a terror group, it's a fascist terror group. They use the Nazi salute, as does Hamas, as does Hezbollah. And when you hear Samuel Arion hailed as some sort of a political martyr, well, just take a look and take a very good look at what it is that he actually represents, and take a look at what it is that his Amen Chorus is actually defending. Speaking of the Amen Chorus, this from Yahoo News, U.S. Muslims asked to write in support of Florida professor on hunger strike. The Council on American-Islamic Relations today called on American Muslims and other people of conscience to write letters in support of Dr. Samuel Arion, a former Florida professor currently on a hunger strike in federal detention to protest his treatment by U.S. authorities. Family members report that Al-Arion collapsed on the 23rd day of his fast and has been moved from Virginia to a medical facility in North Carolina. CAIR asked that letters urging Al-Arion's release be sent to Judge Gerald Lee of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and President Bush. Al-Arion began his hunger strike more than 3 weeks ago after being given a sentence of up to 18 months for refusing to testify before a grand jury in Virginia. That was the grand jury that wanted him to testify about the IIIT. His attorney said, well, his life would be in danger if he did that. Well, golly, why would an Islamic think tank, just a regular old academic slash spiritual institution, why would he be in danger? You don't suppose, do you, that it might actually not be quite as innocent as his defenders would have us believe? Well, that would be a reasonable conclusion under the circumstances, wouldn't it? One of the sad things, too, about the current political landscape, aside from the fact that we have an underground Reich collaborationist government in power in Washington, an institution that's collaborating with the same elements that are directing the Muslim Brotherhood and Samuel Arion et al., when an organization like the CAIR is allowed to represent American Muslims, it's tantamount to having the German-American Bund speak for German-American citizens in the World War II period. It certainly isn't going to do any good, and it can but complicate and exacerbate an already touchy situation. To see Samuel Arion hailed as something of a political martyr in the so-called progressive sector is really something else. And in general, to watch Islamists being embraced as advocates of social justice and social change is really quite something. Indeed, there are some powerful elements associated with the right that are advocating, as well as the progressive sector, that are pro-Muslim Brotherhood. A guy named Reuel Marc Gerecht of the American Enterprise Institute, a former CIA officer, is advocating that Washington hook up with the Muslim Brotherhood. And in Pacifica Radio and related institutions in the so-called progressive sector, Al-Arion and the Muslim Brotherhood are hailed as liberators and advocates of enlightenment, et cetera, et cetera. Aside from their fascist economics, their fascist history, and their murderous manifestations over the decades, one can perhaps encapsulate what the Muslim Brotherhood is all about and how far removed from our cultural mainstream it is. In the early part of this decade, when the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt enjoyed success in parliamentary elections, they began advocating a program of removing sanitary napkin dispensers from girls' public high schools in Egypt. Under strict Islamic law, a menstruating woman is considered extremely unclean. It's considered very bad for a man to associate with a menstruating woman. The idea behind having sanitary napkin dispensers removed from girls' public high schools or women's public high schools was to force them to stay home so that men would not associate with them, or that they should be removed from public high schools was to force their removal from male presence when they were menstruating. Not too enlightened. Anyway, that concludes Side A of For the Record program number 587, update on September 11th and related matters. We're going to continue with this discussion on Side 2, but that concludes Side 1, being recorded on February 25th of 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.